This is All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery, from coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235, and let's talk about wine. Again, the phone number to call is 646-727-3235. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Thank you, Rusty Gold. Thank you. Welcome to All About Wine tonight. Mike is not with us yet. He might be joining us in a little bit here. He works evenings, you see, and he's been quite busy, and so he says he might join us a little bit later, but we can muddle through without him, as always. All of you fans out there of Mike's, sorry, but be sure to tune in on his radio program, Sky Blue Radio. He does a program every Thursday afternoon from 3 to 5 on Sky Blue Radio, and you can pick him up and you can hear him there. Oh, let's see. What do we got? We got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. A lot of odd and end things. As always, no guests. I haven't gotten a guest. If anyone out there knows anybody who might be a good guest, let me know. Rusty has let me know a couple of people, and that hasn't happened on that. But anyway, let me know. I'll be more than happy to check it out and see what I can do and see if I can't get him on the program. As always, we need to look at what's coming up on the coming week. As far as celebrations go, this is August the 10th, which is National S'mores Day. So if you haven't pressed together your s'mores yet today, then do so and have yourself some, I don't know, Gewürztraminer might be good with a s'mores or something like that. Tomorrow, National Raspberry Tart Day. Tarts are good. Raspberry tarts are very good. So, have yourself a tart. Looking at Saturday, I don't have anything here, but it is the start of canning season. So, if anyone out there does canning, get your stuff together and all that. I don't know. I guess some people do can stuff now. My grandmother used to do a lot of canning. She hasn't. She's passed away many years ago, but she used to always have stuff that she canned. Look at what she was doing. Sunday, National Filet Mignon Day. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I love a filet mignon. Bacon wrap filet mignon. Doesn't have to be good. Very, very tender. Best filet mignon I think I've ever had was in Bangkok, Thailand. A little small hole-in-the-wall restaurant, literally. A little small hole-in-the-wall restaurant that made the best filet mignon I've ever had in my entire life. Good chance to enjoy some Cabernet, Pinot Noir, Riesling, Barbera, Cabernet Franc. It's with filet mignon, it doesn't end on what wines you can have with. Monday, the 14th, National Creamsicle Day. Now, here's something interesting. I've had lots of people say that my orange wine tastes a lot like a creamsicle. So that could be an interesting combo there, the orange wine and the creamsicle. Tuesday, the 15th, National Lemon Meringue Pie Day. I like lemon meringue pies. You know, you noticed I haven't said very many foods that I don't like. 16th, National Bratwurst Day. Well, something else I like. Good bratwurst. They show it on a bun here, you know, in the picture that I have. But bratwurst is good, you know, with some sauerkraut or whatever you like to serve it with. And then, you know, what wine? Let's think of something. Bratwurst, well, I suppose depending on the brat. A lighter wine could be good, but I think I would go with a light red wine. find yourself a nice light blend or something, our plantation red, that style. And then the 17th, next Thursday, National Vanilla Custard Day. So there is your upcoming week. And, you know, if you want to jump into next Friday, National Ice Cream Pie Day. So that's something to look forward to. But there we go for the week. Your wine matchup foods, as if we really need to have something to have a reason to drink wine. But that's it. Odds and ends. But first, we have real estate. We haven't done real estate in a couple of months. I was looking back, and I have some things here that I noticed. It's been a while since we've done some real estate. So it's time to catch up. No real estate music. We've always talked about real estate music. We always say, oh, we need real estate music. But we haven't made real estate music yet. Oh, let's see what we have here. No, that's not. No, that's not good. I'm looking at what we have on audio clips here, and let's see. But real estate. Time for real estate. Thank you. Thank you. That's a good thing for real estate. Just a light clapping, and we'll get right into it. We do need something, though. I keep telling Mike, and he says, I don't know, we'll have to find something. But we will. Real estate. Let's see. Let me go back and get this in order here of what I want to talk about. Today is the 10th, so that comes out. So here we go. One-story home with a mature vineyard located on a five view acres. I guess that means a good view. With mature vineyard in Pleasant Valley. This is 2,200 square foot single-story home. Enjoy the awesome local views and entertain in the vineyard setting. Spacious master office, open floor plan, fenced garden area, fruit trees, mature evergreens create a private environment. Mount Diablo views. Mount Diablo is Contra Costa County. Pleasant Valley is right there in Contra Costa County, just north of the Livermore area. So it probably has a vineyard place there. Mount Diablo views. Easy country living, yet close to historic Placerville. No. Located in the Pleasant Valley viticulture area. Mature. Now, I'm confused now. I am confused. Mount Diablo is in Contra Costa County. Pleasant Valley is in Contra Costa County, but yet they're saying that it is close to historic Placerville. That's interesting. I'm confused now because, going in my mind, this doesn't match up anywhere. Either way, mature Petite Sirah and Merlot grapes. If you're interested in that or if you're interested in knowing more, get in touch with me and I'll let you know. Check that out and I'll let you know what I find out about it. Let's go to New York. Cuyahoga Ridge Estate Winery is an established 30-year-old winery, including a vineyard, a cafe, and two homesteads. Strategically located at the heart of Cuyahoga Wine Trail in the Finger Lakes region of New York. This lucrative business receives over 60,000 visitors per year. So there you go. Again, no price. These things never get prices on most of them. But if you're interested, email me, contact me. I will pass on the info. Winery, vineyard, equipment, and house. Award-winning winery vineyard, including all the equipment, and a 2,400 square foot residence for sale in the Sierra foothills. And let's go back out in California. 15 acres, 4 acres are planted with Tempranillo, Petite Sirah, Canet, Semillon, and Sauvignon Blanc, with 6 more plantable acres. So there you go. They already got stuff up there, and it's a good area. And they're getting rains now, so you don't have to worry about the lack of rains. award-winning Woodinville, Washington winery. For sale, a profitable 2,800-plus case production winery. Strong brand presence and direct-to-customer sales channel with high customer loyalty and wine club retention. 10 years plus of 90-plus ratings, platinum, double gold, or gold awards across the entire lineup. Current inventory worth $2.8 million. Doesn't say what they're going to sell it for, but the current inventory is worth $2.8 million. So I'm sure you're going to have to fork out a little bit more than that with everything they're offering there. Kings Garden Winery in Lodi, New York. Fantastic award-winning Kings Garden Vineyards Winery with 1,000-plus beach frontage on Seneca Lake, or Seneca, and 25-plus acre lot. Winery includes tasting room and retail that sell their award-winning wines. 2,400-square-foot production facility and new residence, all located along the Seneca Lake Wine Trail. Wonderful opportunity for someone who is looking to expand their winery or to embark on a new business venture with an established winery. So there you go. That sounds good. Vineyard Winery with a B&B. Price has been reduced by $150,000. Great opportunity for cash positive combination at Gateway to Kings Canyon and Sequoia Park. You know, I think I've talked about this before. They need to reduce it even more because it doesn't seem like people are buying it. Turnkey operation offering includes everything. Consulting winemaker desires to continue and current owners will assist in transition. $1,050,000. Owners are motivated and will consider seller carry back. So, that could be a good deal right there. I don't know where that is. It didn't say. What does it say? Where? Kings Canyon and Sequoia National Park. So, right that area, which should be good traffic, good foot traffic, good traffic people going in and out of those parks there. Large Foothill Winery is our next one here. This is, again, California Foothills. 44-acre, 12-acre vineyard with Zinfandel, Syrah, Cab, Merlot, and Roussanne grapes. 30,000 case capacity. That doesn't mean they're producing it, but it's a capacity. 14,000 square foot covered crush pad. Tasting room, wine club, large picnic area, and storage area. Price has been reduced to $2.25 million. So that is in the Foothill area. Okay. Next one here is. There we go. Anderson Valley. 77-plus acres in Anderson Valley AVA. Legacy property with four separate parcels. Farmed organically for 20 years. In proximity to premium Pinot vineyards, which I don't know if that's a selling point or not, but there you go. Diverse topography. Ideal vineyard land. No, it doesn't say that it's got it planted, though. Meadows, orchard, hillside terrace, benchland, view corridors, creek frontage. All on the fringe of Octopus Mountain. Can't help you. I don't know where Octopus Mountain is. Doesn't ring a bell. Now, see, that's where Mike helps. I say that, and Mike would go, toot-toot-toot, run. Octopus Mountain is located at, you know, and so, you know. With him not available tonight, then I don't have that luxury. Home site with heritage adobe and process of innovation, small utility building, RV site, 35 acres plus or minus is plantable. So Anderson Valley, and Octopus Mountain. Dry Creek Valley Winery site and vineyards, historic 20-plus acre Ammon Ranch and Vineyards in the heart of the valley, producing vineyard-designated quality wines with 60-plus-year-old Zinfandel, 17.2 acres planted. So that's ready. No price again. Winery tasting room opportunity. 17 plus or minus acre vineyard surrounds winery and tasting room. Complete 20 plus minus acre parcel. El Dorado County. Great El Dorado County, he said. That's the foothills. California foothills. Again. Only $695,000 for that. That's a good price. That really is. 20-acre parcel with a Rhinian tasting room already established. That's a good price. In the heart of Texas wine country, profitable award-winning Texas vineyard and winery on 20 acres. Real estate only sale. Inventory and or FF&Es may be purchased. FF&Es, I'm not sure. 2,400 square foot tasting room, storage, offices, and restrooms. Cold storage and processing facility is 1,715 square feet. Two bedroom, two bath is 1,320 square feet. 3.5 acre deer fenced vineyard. 300 gallon per hour well with an irrigation permit. But it's real estate only. So what about all the other stuff? You buy the land and you got to buy everything separately? And why did they list all that stuff if it's just real estate? Give me the parcel. Give me the package. Don't just give me the land. Took a drink and down a bit long. Shenandoah Valley Vineyard Estate. Own one of the finest vineyards in the state, proudly boasting multi-year award-winning California Best of Class grapes. Enjoy summer evenings outdoors on a spectacular 54-acre luxury estate with sweeping views of Shenandoah Valley vineyards, the Sahara's, and the Sacramento Valley. 3,950 square foot, four bedroom, three and a half bath, four fireplaces, formal living room, dining room, and wine cellar. That house sounds great just by itself. Located 20 minutes from shopping and dining in Sutter Creek and Jackson. That's obviously off of 80 there, out of Sacramento, going east on 80 up in that area. Additional acreage, expansion acreage is included in the price. Only $2,245,000. Good price. Good deal. That house is nice. California prices are high anyway. So get something like that at that price. And we got a few more here. Winery, microbrewery, restaurant, and B&B. Wow. Lost in the wildfire, ready for rebuild. Good traffic, Lake County, California. Sell or a joint venture. $800,000 less rebuild funds. So whatever the rebuild funds come in at, then it's going to be deducted from that price. So, but $800,000 means you have yourself a nice location, nice property, but you need to rebuild and start all over because the wildfires burned it down. And that's why winery, microbrewery, restaurant, B&B is all listed there, because actually it's nothing. Vineyard Estate, 68-acre, 48-acre vineyard, 4,500. And there's the phone. Somebody's calling in. Nope, nobody's calling in. The 68-acre, 48-acre vineyard, 4,500-square-foot hilltop home in the center of Fairplay. Price reduced to $2,195,000. Fairplay's in the foothills again, so up in that area. Super premium wine-growing estate. Award-winning winery and vineyards and beautiful estate home and prestigious AVA. Doesn't tell you what AVA. Turnkey with inventory. An owner winemaker willing to consider continued involvement. All inquiries subject to pre-qualification and NDA. I don't know. Somebody know what that is? NDA. That's in North County properties up in northern, north of Napa, it looks like. Pinot Noir Vineyard, Santa Rita Hill, 11-acre vineyard on prime property on the west end of the Santa Rita Hills with west-facing sun exposure. Vineyard has four Pinot Noir clones planted, clone 115, clone 667, and clone 828, and Pommard. That's interesting that they would list the clones. I just really find that very interesting. Guess you would have to know what the clones are to understand if those are good or bad. Profitable Delta Winery and Vineyard. Winery and Vineyard, great cash flow and established distribution for 12,000 cases. Cabernet on 32 acres with attractive and well-equipped winery. Location with strong customer or consumer direct potential. Home site included. All inquiries subject to pre-qualification and NDA. There we go, that NDA again. I'm sure it's something very simple, but I don't know what it is. Probably along the line of, you know, be sure you have enough money before you call so we won't have to fool with you. Again, that's North Country. They said the Delta is probably the Sacramento Delta area there, which very pretty area. Very, very nice area. And that concludes our real estate for this time. I don't want to say this month because it's been a couple since we've done it, but that concludes our real estate for this time. If any of those you are interested in, any of those you want to know more about, then get in touch. I will be more than happy to pass it on to you. Be sure to let me know which one, and that way I won't be having to look up everything. So, if you're interested in wineries, interested in owning your own property. And they're spread out all over the place. We had one in California, one in New York, a couple of Texas there, and Oregon. So let me know. All right. Here we go. Sweetness in a wine. A lot of people like sweet wines. I mean, you know, we know that. It's just, it's a thing. It's, people like it. I had a guy that visited the winery a number of years ago, and it's from France. He said, if I owned a winery, I would not make sweet wines. I would make rye wines, the type that people should enjoy and people should drink. And I told him, yes, and you would be out of business in 2 months, or you would be chasing people out the door going, I can add sugar, I can add sugar. Because people like sweet wines. But people don't always know what level of sweetness they're getting. Now, I know Canada has a system. Canada has a system where it labels their wines from 0 to 5, I think. I'm not completely up on the system. But 0 to 5. I don't like the system. I don't like the system because there is no standard to the system. There's no national standards, nothing that they work on. But I want to talk a little bit about in 2014, the International Riesling Foundation, and that will be referred to as the IRF from now on, instead of saying International Riesling Foundation. IRF in 2014 implemented a standardized sweetness scale to put on the label of all Rieslings, and to help customers determine how sweet the wine is, the sweetness of the wine. And what they've been doing is they've adopted by a lot of different producers on the sweetness scale. It's what they call this is like a little meter, like coffee says mild, bold, rich, and has a graphic type of thing. It also the same thing with wine. He says people won't know what they like or don't like in the sweet wines until they try it. Now, he said it's a little arrow thing. sweet at one end, dry at the other. And it says that this arrow can lead you to the sweetness levels, but they don't just go, well, so they might not have an idea because they may have tried some ones before that they were expecting to be sweet, like Rieslings, and they weren't, because Rieslings can come in all sorts of styles. People come into the winery all the time saying, well, I like a Riesling. I go, yeah, but Rieslings can be very, very, very sweet, and Rieslings can be extremely dry. Go up to the Virginia, West Virginia, they're making some wonderful dry Rieslings there. And so therefore, going up there and saying, I like a Riesling, they're going to be pouring you something dry, and you're going to go, ew. So just saying Riesling doesn't always give you a true judgment of what it's going to be. They're saying that this new profile, the IRF taste profile, is based on an interplay of sugars, acid, and pH, plus a subjective perception of the wine. The taste profile gives the consumers a reliable guide as to what is in the bottle of a Riesling. All right? It's not just the residual sugars. It's more than residual sugars. The residual sugar, if you just go by residual sugar, then okay, but you have residual sugars, then you can have the acid up there a little bit, the pH can be balanced a little bit higher, and then when you taste that, you are getting a wine that gives you a taste perception of something that isn't sweet. You're going to get that acid in there, and sometimes that acid, people taste something sweet, and they'll get, oh, this is bitter, or, oh, this is sour, or any number of different words, which actually they don't know what they're tasting, and it is the acid, but they use those words to describe it, which is all they know. I mean, I'm not faulting them on that, but because of that, they don't detect the sweetness, they immediately detect the sourness, the bitterness, the tartness of it. And so you have to balance out the sweetness with everything. So the new IRF taste profile takes all these into consideration. It's now on over 30 million bottles in the U.S. market, and it's also a good tool, they're saying, you know, to teach people. Fetzer Wines, and we're all familiar with Fetzer, one of the big ones in the country, is now using the IRF taste profile, and they started using it right after it was created. Now, this is, we're looking at 15 that they started to do this now. So it's been in existence for a couple of years now. Fetzer was inspired to use it to inform customers about the style of wines it's using. It's, the Rieslings are probably the most diverse grape variety on the market in terms of the style, and it varies so widely from the dry to the botrytis to the late harvest interpretations. And Fetzer said, we need to do something, let the people know what we were doing, what we offered them, because it isn't always just Riesling. You know, I have a Riesling here. Oh, good, I love Rieslings. They're sweet. Well, no. They also use, Fetzer also uses Riesling, or the IRF, to label Gewürztraminers. And that also is something else that people, the ones who try it, think it's going to be a little bit sweeter, but Gewürztraminers, again, have a big range in there. So it is the IRF taste profile is currently the only scale adopted by the pretty much the industry-wide by wine producers. There are other scales that you'll find regionally or at a winery's discretion, which, you know, again, that's not a good thing. This is why I don't like the Canadian system, because it's not a national. It is national, but it leaves too much up to the wineries. I want to sell this wine, so instead of putting a 3 on it, and I'm going to put a 2 on it. And people go, oh, well, you know, it just, and I've had somebody tell me, well, you'll sell it, but then people start understanding that that's not that sweet. But, you know, by that time, you've sold yourself a whole bucket full of them, so you don't have to worry too much about that. It's not, the IRS is not entirely based on BRICS, and that's the amount of residual sugar left in the wine after the fermentation. That's really not indicative of the perceived sweetness of a wine. You know, sweetness in a wine can be obtained from some alcohol content and other influences like time of harvest, oak barrel aging, the drinker's palate, fruit taste, stuff like that. It's all going to give a different perception of sweetness in the wine. The perception of sweetness, this is from TotalWine.com. Total Wine's a big company all around, wine cellar. They state, quote, "The perception of sweetness in wine, it can be deceptive. True sweetness is the result of residual sugar left in the wine from the fermentation process. There are other components in wine that can increase your impression of sweetness that is unrelated to residual sugar. Intense fruit flavors can be confused with sweet flavors, but wine can be fruity without being sweet." And that's very true, you know. Other components in wine, such as tannins and acidity, sometimes counterbalance the perception of sweetness. Many excellent German Rieslings, for example, have such high acidity that they taste crisp and dry, even though they might contain higher levels of residual sugar than the average table wine. Lower levels of tannin and acidity can create, just by their absence, a stronger impression of sweetness. So, therefore, this IRF scale is based on a sampling of the residual sugar, the acid, pH, and again, your taste profile might even throw that off even then. Determining the sweetness of any given wine can be particularly challenging because even though the grape may lend itself to a dry or a sweet style, many styles of wine can be classified as off-dry or super sweet. It just depends on what the winemaker is doing and how, what they decide to, how much sugar to leave in, how much sweetness, basically. Rieslings alone can be categorized into 3 categories, sweet, unsweet, and then in the middle. Gewurztraminers also. I mean, I've had Gewurztraminers that were very sweet, and I've had Gewurz that were just beautifully dry. And with the spiciness of a Gewurz and all that. And if you've never had a Gewurztraminer, if you're listening to this and you've never had a Gewurztraminer, get one. They are phenomenal. That's spelled GEWURZTRAMINER, Gewurztraminer. You've probably seen them, never picked one up. Do. Unlike other sweetness scales that you'll find in different places, the IRF scale is partially based on subjective influence, and that is your taste buds. Their subjective taste perception has been part of the scale since the beginning. Basically, the winemaker should measure the sugar, acid, and pH, and then consult the IRF guidelines to see where the wine should fall from strictly a technical standpoint. But his or her taste perception is also key to the final decision on where the arrow goes. So you do all these tests and everything. You say, okay, according to these tests, this should be a 2. You taste it, and it gives you a 3. All right. Subjective, but still, though, you have other items that guide you up to that point. And you know, this is, you know, there's one of the reasons why you can't do a industry-wide standard sweetness scale, which Canada does. And that is my argument against them. I love Canadian wines. Don't get me wrong. I think it's great and it's wonderful. But the scale system is too... It's not... Well... All right. Even a panel of taste experts can't start telling you different styles of wines and start telling you where they're different, stuff like that. So, yeah... The IRF is a good starting point. It's a good way to do it. It takes into account people's overall perception. It takes into account sugars, residual sugars that are left. It also takes into account the acid and the pH, which all also influence, and probably the tannins. If you have a wine that has some tannins in it, that will also influence it. So look on your Rieslings when you're out there. You're buying Rieslings, you check out the scale, and it's a good way to find out where the wine is, what it is doing for you, and how it's reacting, and what you're looking for, and all that. So, the new sweetness, it's not new, the IRF has been around since 2014, but I don't think, or 2015, but I don't think we've seen it a lot. We haven't been looking for it, one reason. All right, another sip. Actually, I'll tell you what wine I'm drinking tonight, but I'm not drinking wine tonight. I'm having coffee tonight. I'm exhausted today, and I have to have coffee because I got things I got to get done after the program. So there you go with that. I want to give you little snippets of stuff here. Cannabis in California, and I know I talk about this every once in a while. Cannabis in California is coming up with a new cannabis packaging. AYA. AYA is growing using just four ingredients: earth, water, sun, and sky, with no pesticides or chemicals or anything else. And it's crafted the way that wine is crafted. You know what I mean? With the terroir and all. And so they're coming with new packaging, which celebrates the different things. The packaging has an eagle, an owl, an elk, and a bear on the package, which tries to show the image of beauty, angel, soul, stuff like that. The article caught my eye because of the correlation between wine and cannabis, which I think, not that they have to, but I think we're going to start seeing more and more tie-ins between the two, simply because they are available in those areas all the same. So I wanted to pass that on. Does organic matter? Is organic worth it? Is organic meaningful? In April, a team of researchers led by Professor Magali A. Delmas. He works for the UCLA Institute of the Environment and the Anderson School of Management. Announced results that a study comparing the consumer perception versus the critical reviews of organic wines. And he came out with some surprising results. Delmas instigated the study after hearing reportedly from winemakers that although organic farming practices do indeed result in higher quality fruit, they believe consumers place less value on wines labeled as such. Now, that's interesting. Do you? I don't. I don't think less value of organic wines. I don't think more, but I don't think it's less. I mean, I've had organic wines that were very good, but I've had ones that were not labeled organic that were very good. And same thing with all other wines. So, I don't know. I believe consumers place less value. They confirmed this bias in an independent survey in which wine buyers indicated a ceiling of $15 for organic wines. Above that price point, they wanted real wines. Real in quotes, but still, real wines. They didn't want organic. Whoa, that reminds me of people asking me if a blush wine or a rosé is a real wine. Yeah, they are, but organic's not real. Conversely, though, after studying more than 70,000 wine reviews written between 1998 and 2009, and cross-referencing information about vintage, variety, and region with the USDA and California Department of Agriculture data about organic and sustainable farming practices, the team found that organic wines scored an average of 4.1 points higher than conventional wines, even in blind tastings. 4.1 is substantial. When you start looking at the scales of Wine Spectator and Wine Enthusiast, and they don't have a big spread between their wine. Both of those are starting like at 75 or 80 in their scoring points. So a 4.1 difference on average is substantial. You're pulling that wine out of a good wine to a great wine, and that's a big difference. All of this points to a marketing and messaging opportunity. If wine and other beverage producers are using organic and sustainable ingredients, you can reset the perception of their products with consumers. Prices could increase and beneficial land practices could become more widely embraced. So, yeah, organic does make a difference with the experts. And, yeah, organic is good. And, yeah, organic is fine. But it's a perception with people out there now that organic, once you pass that $15 price point, really isn't worth it. Here you go. BellaVitaBags.com. BellaVitaBags, BellaVitaBags.com. It's a new product. It is called BellaVitaBags' new Porta Vino Wine Purse. It has a hidden insulated party pouch inside the bag. It can hold two bottles of wine or a 1.5 liter. Very functional and stylish. What you do is you lift up the flap, you pull out the little spigot, and you pour yourself a glass of wine off of that. Yeah, women carry around, looks just like a purse, and it is possible to carry other stuff in it. So it's wine in a purse. And, you know, I mean, like, why wouldn't that be a good thing? Dear, could I have your purse for a while, please? I want to give myself a glass of wine. But 1.5 liter of any beverage, actually. But, you know, if it's a wine purse, use it for wine. Amazon. Oh, the biggie, the big guy. I think my wife is trying to slowly make Amazon even bigger than what it is. But Amazon has joined the ranks of companies tapping into new ways people are buying and discovering wine. They've announced in May that its Prime Now members have expanded to include beer, wine, and liquor in select U.S. cities. Now, what they do is they deliver to a partnership, which they've set up with brick-and-mortar shops, and it could be your local little store, it could be big ones, but they partnership brick-and-mortar shops, and when they receive the orders, they send it to the wine shop, and they securely package it for delivery. Then Amazon drivers pick up from the store and transport items as directed to whatever facility or whatever home. Two-hour delivery is free. 2 hours. I mean, oh my gosh, I'm running out of wine. You know, 2 hours later, you can have it delivered to you. 1 hour delivery, if you're in a hurry, is $7.99. Alcohol deliveries are between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday. They also have the new meal kit delivery service from HelloFresh. So if you're having wine and you want to add food to it, then you can do that too. But two-hour delivery for wine to your door. What's the deal? Let's see. There's something else here. Where is it? There it is. A couple of wines you need to try here. Let me give you the information on them. This is out of a magazine called Spirited. In fact, I mentioned that to you a couple weeks ago. New magazine, Spirited. Basically, they're saying essence of the craft. It's not just wine, it's spirits, all sorts of other stuff. A wine, beer, cider, spirits. New magazine, interesting. A lot of neat stuff in it. You know, if you're interested, look up spirited.com. And there is that it? Yeah. No, I'm sorry, spiritedbiz.com. www.spirited.com. Spiritedbiz.com. Interesting magazine. It's got not just wine, but spirits and all sorts of stuff. A couple of wines to check out here. First one, 2015 Sauvignon Blanc Fig Tree Vineyards, which is Cordero Vineyards in Hillsburg, California. Oaking a Sauvignon Blanc often overwhelms the fruit, but the combination of this one is new French and acacia oak barrels, which adds complexity and structure. Less grassy than many Sauvignon Blancs, but it still has the lemon zest, lemongrass, and even dry grass herbs. So, Quivira, Q-U-I-V-I-R-A. Quivira Vineyards or QuiviraWine.com. And another one here for you is Rosé of Pinot Noir. I've had Pinot Noir rosés, and they're very, very good. This is from Chehalem Winery in Newburgh, Oregon. This says a little bit heavier, more red wine-like rosé. And I think that's the one I had was like that, too, and that's probably why I enjoyed it. They're calling this a postmodern style. It's 14% alcohol for a rosé. Wow. More of a food wine than a porch wine. It has flavors of dried strawberry, black cherry, less crisp and more robust than you're going to find in many rosés. But sounds interesting. It sounds good. I've had a Pinot Noir rosé, and it was exciting. This is from Chehalem Wine, C-H-E-H-A-L-E-M, wines.com. So another one you can, if you see it or if you search for it, you can get that. And then, what time is it? Oh, my gosh, I've only got 10 minutes. Let me quickly hit on something here I was going to talk about. AVAs. I've mentioned AVAs before. If you're new at listening to the program, then AVAs is one of the things I've continuously talked about. AVA, American Viticultural Area, a designated area that is specialized for growing the grapes in the area, specialized for the climate, the soil. It gives a unique taste and to the wine. Okay, there are AVAs all over this country. There are a bunch of them. An AVA could be in an AVA. You don't have to have AVA separate. An AVA could be in an AVA, and they can be any size. I'm having a hard time finding my monitor on this. AVAs can be any size. They can be, you know, enormous. The Mississippi Valley AVA, which stretches up and down the Mississippi River, way too big, I think, for an AVA. But, you know, hey, that's not my decision. And the Trade Tobacco Bureau sets up the AVAs. So, and then you've got small ones that consist of just, you know, a couple hundred acres. they have to have a certain size to be an AVA, but okay, it's just, yeah, there we go. I finally found what I was looking for. But AVAs can be within AVAs. Napa Valley is an AVA, but there are AVAs in Napa Valley, which gives you even more distinct little growing regions, little stink growing areas. Napa Valley has 475 wineries, give or take a few, and they're all relatively small in size. You know about the big ones and all that, but and their AVAs are relatively small in size. There are 1/6 of the total acreage planted in Bordeaux, and since 1981, boundaries were set. The valley has been further subdivided into 16 appellations that vary in size from 3,300 acres to more than 16,000 acres. And at least 85% of the grapes must come from the AVA for it to carry that designation. You know, how important. Most people don't know about AVAs, and this is the thing. AVAs are in the wine business, very important. I had to take a sip, sorry. In the wine business, AVAs are very important. But how important are they to the people out there? And I tend to always think, and this is something I brought up before, they're not important simply because people don't know what an AVA is. They don't know the significance of it. They don't know anything about it. They've probably seen the names on the labels before on wine bottles and not realize what it means or what it is. So, AVAs. But Napa. Napa has a bunch of AVAs inside the Napa AVA. And you can get grapes from Napa, and you can get, you know, and have Napa grapes. But you can also, Napa's total acreage is 401,370 acres. Out of that, 43,500 are planted. But then you got AVAs. Atlas Peak is an AVA. That's total 11,000 acres. 1,500 acres are planted. Calistoga AVA, 12,675 acres and 2,600 plus acres planted. Childs Valley AVA, which you probably never heard of some of these things. 6,000 acre total, 1,000 planted. Combsville AVA, 11,000 acres total, 1,360 planted. Diamond Mountain, 5,000 acres with 500 acres planted. Diamond Creek Winery is a Diamond Mountain District AVA. Howell Mountain. Charles Krug comes from there. That's 14,000 acre total, 1,500 acres planted. Los Caneros, 3,700 acres, 800 planted. And this crosses over into Sonoma and Napa. It's one of those up in the northern part. Mount Veeder, Trinchero and Camus. Wineries come from there. 1,600 acre total, 1,000 planted. Oak Knoll District of Napa Valley, that is an AVA. Total 8,300 acres, 4,000 acres are planted. These are within Napa. Oakville. Oakville has always been one of my favorite areas there. And that's Robert Mondavi comes out of that. Harlan, Schrader Cellars, a bunch of others that are in Oakville. Been there for a long time. 5,700 acres, 5,275 planted. It's like the whole AVA is planted. Rutherford, 6,840 acres with 4,371 planted. Spring Mountain, 8,600 acres with 1,000 planted. Excuse me. Stag's Leap, 2,700 acre total AVA. 1,350 acres planted. You've got Stag's Leap Wine Cellars coming out there, obviously. St. Helena is an AVA. 9,000 acres, 6,800 planted. Wild Horse Valley, 3,300 acres, 100 acres planted. Yountville, 8,620 acres, 4,000 planted. And I think, yeah, that's it. These are all AVAs within Napa. These are all areas that... Oh, wait a minute. I need to plug in this. I didn't realize I wasn't plugged in. These are all areas within Napa that are AVAs. So AVAs, it should give you distinct, but I don't know. I'm a fan of AVAs, but then I have questions about it. Is it really worth it? I mean, you're getting these little small AVAs within Napa. Napa has a great reputation. Does it make it better if you're getting it from Yountville or Oakville or any of the dozens of others or any of the, you know, the 16 total ones there? Yeah, maybe no, maybe not. Who knows? Who really? I suppose if you're looking for something that's unique and you got a trained palate, yeah, okay, well, maybe so. But most people, and I've always said this, most people don't understand AVAs because they really don't know AVAs. And they don't know AVAs because it's so different from others. So, you know, is a wine from Oakville better than a wine from Atlas Peak, or not as good or equal, or if you can just call it Napa? I don't know. These are things with AVAs. We have them throughout the country. There's lots of them around the country. In fact, whenever I talk about any states, I'll always mention how many AVAs and what they are. And it creates a unique taste profile for that particular AVA. So, I don't know. At times I'm going, yay, AVAs, and at other times I'm going, why waste our time? Right now I'm at that one of those, why waste our time on AVAs? But I just wanted to tell you all the different ones that were in Napa. And that's how I'm going to end tonight. Boy, Mike never did join us. Hope he's doing well. Thank you for tuning in. We do appreciate it. It's always fun. Always look forward to doing the program. And always look forward to knowing people out there enjoying it also. Have any questions? Have any comments? Email me. The email address is at the end of the show on the outro. And if you want to know any information about the real estate, then get in touch. I will be happy to pass that on to you. If you know anybody who wants to be on the show, wine people, I don't want to talk to someone who is driving a truck and has it full of wine and beer. That's not what I'm looking for. You know what I mean, wine people. So allaboutwine101@gmail.com. If you need to get a hold of me, or you can go Facebook, we're on Facebook, All About Wine, Facebook. And you can always get in touch with the winery too. Information will be at the end of the show. We will talk to you next week. Thank you for tuning in. Have yourself a wonderful week and drink lots of wine. Be safe. And we will see you next week. Where's my outro? All right. Now, see, I should have had that ready. Mike would have had that ready right away. That's why we need him. Take care.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron. Originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida Estates Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com www.blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.